I guess we should start because we're saying some amazing things.
Yeah, this is actually really good.
Let's just get wind down here and kind of get into it. But yeah, Dan, today's your last day at NAL.
It is a sad day for me.
We're going to miss you. We know you're leaving and you're probably not going to be part of this podcast anymore, but I'll try to fill your gap with maybe a turtle that sits in for you and snaps every once in a while. No, just kidding. But you've been fantastic. It's been great having you for the last 4 years. You really accelerated this team and the position of NAL in Coito. You've carried a lot of POCs, done a lot of networking, and brought in a lot of great business. So good luck on your new endeavor. We know you're going with Zipline. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, thank you. First of all, thank you so much. It's really been truly a pleasure working at NAL and meeting all the wonderful, knowledgeable experts that are in the company. And you too, Amit, it's just been great. And we started this podcast and we've really grown our listenership. And I think we've been able to share a lot of educational and also fun information with everybody that listens. So it's been really great. So my next step is Zipline. It's a startup company here in San Francisco that makes autonomous drones that deliver medical supplies in rural areas in Africa. And they're also expanding to other parts of the world in Asia. And so it's still in the mobility space. It's something that I think is very exciting because it's using cutting edge technology to bring services to people that need it. So that's something that's really special to me.
And what do you think, like today there's not a lot of drones that are being used for this application, but let's move to like 2030, 2035. Do you think there's going to be a lot of drones in the airspace, and is there potential for collision?
Yeah. That's always one of the number one considerations in flying in general, right? Whether it's an autonomous drone or it's a piloted plane. Just like on the ground, you want to avoid collisions. The same thing is true in the air. And so there's actually a lot of similarities between transportation on the ground and transportation in the air. There's a regulatory body that manages what you're supposed to do to keep it safe and avoid collisions. And you have to follow those very strict rules. And of course, having communication between all the bodies that are in the air is an important part of collision avoidance. So that's kind of one of the important pieces of technology that Zipline has.
Hmm. And what kind of sensors do you see them using to avoid all of these collisions besides just communications between the individual drones?
You know, I think in the future, any of the sensors that we talk about for autonomous vehicles, we've talked about LiDAR and camera and radar, sonar even for parking applications, right? I don't know about sonar in the air, but any of those I think are applicable to drones in the future. It is a fairly new industry, right? So there's not really been a clear like go-to sensor especially for collision avoidance. Mm-hmm. It is kind of a different application because you've got much higher speeds and much longer distances than in automotive. But I think a lot of the same guiding principles and sensor selection that we've talked a lot about on this podcast are applicable in the air as well.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think we're getting to the point, as we are now in the automotive section, that we're looking at technologies that might be useful when you have one out of every two cars that are autonomous. And one of those applications, for example, are the FMCW LiDARs and radars that kind of can detect what's out there using different signals or chirps, and then make sure that the signal that's received back by this particular sensor is that of their own sending. Do you think that's something that'll happen with drones as well?
Absolutely. Well, and it's interesting, you know, it's used in nature, isn't it? Bats use that to mm-hmm. get around in the air, and there could be thousands of bats flying around in a cave and they don't bang into each other because they're using echolocation, which is very similar to radar and FMCW LiDAR. Mm-hmm. Right. So
yeah,
we know that it's applicable. Maybe when we get to a period of time when there's so many drones in the air that it looks like a bunch of bats, maybe that's the kind of technology we need.
Right. So it's great that you're joining this new company, and I think there's a lot to learn because you're just in the preliminary stages of it. It's going to evolve into something that's unique and needed around the world. And today's guest is someone that is working on providing the right perception, meaning that detecting certain situations using what we call FMCW radar or LIDAR, how Dan described bats use to navigate through space. The CEO of Blue Space, Christine Moon. How are you today, Christine?
I'm good. I'm actually president and COO.
Oh.
Not that the name really matters at early stage company, but what that means is that I do everything here except for coding. and that's the fun part of it. But the team here is really great. You know, we're pretty flat, unlike, larger organizations like Quito or NAL. So it means, you do everything from, closing the door at night and going home, turning on the alarm, to having all the important meetings with partners and ecosystem players like yourselves.
And you also do a lot of the speaking events, don't you? We are our CES meetup in 2020.
Yeah. Right, that's right.
Yeah, I love the fact that you guys both run this podcast and the meetup. Thank you for doing that. It's one of the more informative and fun. And I got to learn a lot about you guys. And now that Dan's leaving, I gotta maybe try to fill in for him.
Yeah, that's right. That'd be great. Guest hosts every month. Yeah. That's a good idea.
Anyways, thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you, Christine.
Yeah, we'd like to first find out about your journey and how you got to where you are now.
Yeah, so as a famous investor or at times controversial investor, an entrepreneur, Peter Thiel says, do a startup when you have a secret or a hidden advantage. And my co-founder, Joel, and I, our secret or a hidden advantage was all the learnings that came from running a full AV stack company called Drive.ai. It was spun out of Stanford's AI lab. And in 2019, it was acquired by Apple. And that was a fork in the road when Joel and I could have, walked the path of working at a big company, which is, there's a lot of pros there. But we also felt that having done deep learning, machine learning, we saw some of the vulnerabilities and felt that to really move autonomy industry forward, there needed to be a different way. So in 2019, we founded this company called BlueSpace.ai. Currently, we're based out of Emeryville, two blocks down from Pixar Animation Studio. And we are, a mighty team of few and young company, but really all the industry experts from, all the famous AV companies and OEMs came together to really draw from our experience of having been there, done that, and being able to answer the question that really ails the industry, which is, how do you fail safe? Right. That's how, where I am today. But physically, I came to California in 2004 when I joined Google. And I was there for about 9 years before moving on to other tech companies. But I've moved around a lot, like Dan. I listened to the earlier podcast and I heard that you actually lived in New York as well at one point.
I did. Yes.
And Amit, you're from Canada, I believe, or you had
that's right. Sam. Yeah.
Okay, got it. So similarly, I lived in New York and, in Connecticut as well, but also lived over, overseas, Hong Kong, South Korea is my home country, my mother tongue as well. So just like the OEM industry or the automotive industry, it's quite global. And that's one of the, I think, fun parts of being in this space. You get to meet folks from Europe, Asia, all over. And, the technology we're working on is truly an impact that could have globally as well.
Really great. Yeah, thanks for that story. And truly a global person. It sounds like you've had a lot of experiences across the world. So thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about Blue Space and what does Blue Space do?
Yeah, so we're an early stage software company that provides software to the solution and to the question, a software solution to the question I mentioned earlier. How does one fail safe when it comes to autonomy? And this software enables safety, ADAS feature, or backup safety system for AD, autonomous driving. And this has huge implications for on-road applications like robotaxi, trucking, logistics, or off-road, such as autonomous hauling trucks, or even defense industries. And you might be asking, well, how? I mean, safety and reliability are one of the core pillars of a automotive industry. Mm-hmm. Well, we do that from software perspective. As I mentioned, our pain points of deep learning, machine learning, and not being able to get away from the black box label that it has, and being able to quantify the error bounds that we have, and being able to sort of walk a third party through our software algorithm so that we know exactly how it will perform in the future, different ODDs and environments, and being able to derive our algorithm based on math and physics is a differentiator and different solution that Blue Space brings to the industry.
Well, thank you for that. Yeah, Blue Space is quite a unique company, and we've had the opportunity to see how it works. I want to get a better understanding of who your customer is, how they use your software, and how you work your business model into it.
Yeah, so our customers are anyone really working in some level of autonomy. So as you know, there is L0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And despite the misnamed fully self-driving, that's L2+. So anyone who's developing ADAS feature and, you know, obviously with the goal of getting to AD, L4 and 5, you know, that could be an OEM. It could be a tier one innovating on behalf of an OEM. It could be the fleet operator. So I feel like more recently, the traditional sort of model has been really shaken up a bit, such that even early stage companies like us have the ability to engage with OEMs directly, or, you know, we can be the tier two to tier one, or we can, you know, aspire to be the fleet operator ourselves. And in some ways, Blue Space is doing all of that, you know. So we are engaged with players in the on-road applications as well as off-road. And essentially what's come to light is that they have, you know, a system that works well. But some of the challenges they come to us for is, well, we can't certify. You know, deep learning, machine learning, training-based model, it's really hard to certify. And having a path towards certification and being able to persuade a policymaker that your software will operate in a certain way, being able to predict that, not being able to, I mean, what's happening is that the industry is like looking back and thinking, okay, we got into an accident and let's see what happened. That can be done retrospectively, but not going forward, which is the challenge we had as well at our full AD stack company, taking a training-based model. And then being able to, you know, think about, well, instead of waiting for the computer to have been trained in a certain location with certain objects in mind, can Blue Space help to see a thing for the first time in a new location and handle it well? And that's where I think our technology, given that we could do that, a resounding yes to that question, there's a lot of interest, and we were lucky to have been selected as the finalist for NASA's iTech Challenge, where if you think about it, you know, everything that we face here on Earth, latency in Mars, it's 12-minute latency. You give it a command and the rover will react to it 12 minutes later. And then not having enough training data, and having to map, it took them well over $1 billion to map, and 10 years to map all of have the map for Mars for the rover to roam around, and the vehicle being really expensive, so you don't want to have an accident nor be stuck. So all the challenges that we face here is even more pronounced there. And I think that's where Blue Space really brings a differentiated approach of being able to see things for the first time and do it well. And that has, you know, great implications for those who want to commercialize into different markets on a different vehicle form factor. And this is all enabled. I think you talked about the sensors earlier on it, which was 4D sensors, right? FMCW LiDARs and imaging radars. So yep. All this innovation that went into hardware, I believe that, you know, as you see in different industries like mobile industry, where it's the hardware innovation that really brings on software or enables software innovation. And I'd like to say that it's the software innovation that makes the hardware sing and make it really useful. So that's where Blue Space is today.
Great. Well, first of all, congratulations on on being a finalist in that NASA iTech event. That's very cool.
Yeah.
You brought up a really good point, Christine, about how software being kind of, you know, difficult to implement into the automotive industry. And it's because when something does go wrong, you've got to be able to investigate the root cause. Regulatory bodies are going to want to know about that. The public wants to know about it. And of course, the car manufacturer wants to know what goes wrong. And sometimes with some of these AI software neural nets that a lot of the AV companies are developing, it's hard to get that, right? And that's why Waymo and Cruise and Zoox are driving millions and millions of miles all around the city and even in simulation, but still not quite at full deployment. So can you talk a little bit about why is software so difficult to implement into the automotive industry? And as it becomes more implemented, what kind of changes are we going to start to see, do you think, in the automotive supply chain and just how automotive companies interact on a business level?
Right. So I think I see the phrase used such as like software defined and fill in the blank, hardware, car, sensor. And I do think, I think a famous investor also said, I think it was Mark Andreessen who said, software is going to eat the world. And, you know, I agree with it, but, you know, without hardware, none of this is possible as well, right? So I do think both have to coexist. But the reason it's so hard is because we're taking it sort of like ODD, you know, operational design domain, or a scenario in which you can, or geofence in which like the software can operate well. ODD by ODD approach or a mile by mile approach, right? You know, people say, you know, you'll hear comments like, oh, the player with the largest training data set will win. And that's because, you know, it's really, you know, training-based model, deep learning, machine learning, it's very effective. We've done that in the past. However, it starts with, well, can the computer handle it? Yes, as long as it's seen it before. And that part is the huge caveat. So then the question that one should ask is, well, what if it hasn't? Then how are you going to address that situation? That's the problem right now. And that's where every insider in the industry knows, such things as like unprotected left turn, or driving down the road without the divider at a higher speed is some of the challenges that exist. Intersections are notorious, right? And I think this is where, like you said, although Waymo has been at this for, you know, even when I was at Google, you know, back in late 2000s, you know, like 2007, 8, 9, that's when they get started as chauffeur projects. And then even today, like, why aren't they everywhere? We should see the streets filled with them, you know, and Cruise as well. It's because, you know, we're doing it by ODD by ODD, or sometimes when there are situations, that's an outlier to what they've been training on, then they have to do a patchwork of being able to address it. And that is very expensive. And also it's time consuming, and it's like a leaky bucket. It never ends. Mm-hmm. So I do think the current approach, whether you talk about synthetic data or, you know, it's supervised versus unsupervised training, you know, Blue Space is of the opinion, okay, training is effective as a tool, but it's not going to get you to that long tail. And that's where we really focused on, you know, back to the original question of how do you fail safe? And that means without having seen it before, you should be able to handle all scenarios. And the traditional answer people give is, well, we're going to come to a safe stop. Well, what if you come to a safe stop on the railroad tracks? You know, like we really have to think about all situations. And I think that's where the industry is here today. And with the new innovations that's coming to market, as you guys know very well, you know, past few CESs, a lot of the 4D sensors, whether it's imaging radar and FMC or LiDAR, have been coming to market. And I think as far as we know, we don't know any other software player that's really focusing on fail-safe mode with the approach that we're taking. So I guess this is where, you know, with the advance, I mean, thanks to Tesla, a lot of people are aware of ADAS features now. I think it was underutilized, and, you know, not many people knew how to use it. as well. So the education piece comes, although it's misnamed Autopilot, FSD is enabling people to really rely on some of the features that's offered with these EVs and some of these, you know, new cars that people can rely on for additional safety. And we should do that. I think safety has to be the focus of any software and new cars that we bring to the market, whether it's passenger vehicles or commercial vehicles. And I do think there is, you know, even companies like us can add value to that conversation we're having today. Sorry, that was a long monologue.
No, that's totally fine.
Please edit.
No, I think you made a lot of good points. And talking about safety a little bit, there's over 40,000 deaths per year due to traffic fatalities, and countries spend 3% of their GDP on accidents that happens every year due to these fatalities, whether it's just minor fender benders or something a lot more severe. And moving on from that, that's a good segue into the next question. Blue space is kind of an esoteric solution, right? So I don't think the average consumer understand what benefit they're going to have for themselves in terms of user experience, whether they're going from L2 to L3 to L4, specifically around L4, L5, when you really don't care who's driving the car because no one is. So could you explain maybe a little bit about how Blue Space will help the average consumer who's buying an L2 plus versus if they're riding in an L4?
Yeah. I'm going to actually expand that even more because we don't just focus on passenger vehicles. There was a recent DOT grant that focused on, can we have a solution for commercial ADAS solution for transit buses? If you think about ADAS features being, you know, not made aware or not being available or underutilized in the passenger space, it's even more pronounced in the commercial space, whether it's trucking or buses. And we're talking about an average user. And as you know, a lot of millennials don't want to own, you know, POVs, personally operated owned vehicles. They actually are very environmentally aware. So they are looking at EVs, but also looking to utilize public transit. So as the rider or as the passenger or even driver sharing the road or a pedestrian, you know, on the road, you do want to think about, well, are these vehicles safe? Because as you know, humans are very prone to distraction. I think they call it 3D, right? Distracted, drugged. And I believe there was another one, which was like drowsy, you know, and, you know, with, you know, mobile phones and all these texts and, you know, podcasts that sometimes I listen to, I think it's you do want to think about what are the safety enhancements that we can bring to these vehicles. And as a user, you can just, you know, there's a lot of marketing and, you know, not that L2, 3, 4 really matters, but you want to know, hey, is there a path towards a third party? Not just, you know, company A saying, oh, we've driven X millions of miles, so we're good. Because as everyone knows in the industry, driving down 101 or highway is very different than navigating the streets of Detroit or Manhattan or Tokyo or Seoul for that matter. And not every mile is the same, nor should you care. They've driven millions of miles because you care about the mile that you're riding, right? And that's where having ability to have a third party be able to certify the software is important. And I guess from Blue Space's perspective, we enable the safety features that can be certified and that can be, you know, we can walk somebody through. I think Swiss Re actually put out a white paper that said, we have two challenges facing the insurance industry today, which is one, we have no access to any of these software that's, you know, coming out to the mobility players, like whether it's fully, you know, self-driving or whether it's autonomous driving or ADAS or advanced ones. But then two, even if we had access to such software, we wouldn't know what to do with it. So I think what's happening now is a lot of concern and dialogue around how do we know when it's safe? And the metrics that DMV puts out, whether it's MPI, miles per intervention, how many miles have you driven until the human had to intervene? How many simulated miles are not the necessarily the best indicator I think there should be a dialogue around, okay, what are the ways in which you really tested your software? Can you help us walk through your algorithms such that we know what will happen in different scenarios? And I think, you know, for our potential customers, I think you asked who would use BlueSpace. As I said, it's those in the industry. You want to be able to have that conversation and be able to be transparent about that. And BlueSpace can definitely aid in that discussion. But for the average user, we should demand it, you know, as a public transit user or as a driver for some of these commercial vehicles or even as a family member, can we have that dialogue around what are the metrics that should matter? Should there be some level of consistency across different, you know, I'm putting in quotes, drivers that's coming out for AD? So that we could better understand what are the failure modes and how do we fail safe at the end of the day.
Very interesting. I'm glad you brought up the commercial buses because that's something I think the mobility industry and the AV industry in general don't really talk enough about because that is a great application, right? They get lots of miles and they transport lots of people. But they're not really equipped with ADAS features, like you say.
Yeah, not at all.
Why do you think that is? Could it be because passenger vehicles have all these like IIHS standards mm-hmm. and a lot of them consumer facing, I guess, safety ratings that help right. to sell the vehicle? Maybe the commercial bus industry doesn't have the same sort of marketing approach.
Yeah, very good point. It was initially a surprise to me. These buses, especially the electric vehicle buses, cost anywhere close to $1 million. There's high customization. And because the volume is rather small, and because of the unique customization in terms of like the internal, like interior design, how do you want your seats laid out? What kind of, seat setup would you like? And all that stuff kind of leads to obviously higher cost and also sort of like higher cost and customization that doesn't scale. But there was a study by APTA American Public Transit Association, where they said a lot of the accidents is between these transit buses and other vehicles, privately owned vehicles. And two things happen. Number one, it leads to fatality often of the smaller vehicle, right? So even if you don't use these commercial or public transit buses, if you're driving, you should be concerned. And then also for the passengers in these buses, there's a lot of injuries because they're often standing, they don't have seatbelts, right? So when you slam on the brakes, there's fatalities and injuries all around. And then also that's where, you know, having these commercial ADAS system. And I believe there was a gentleman, I think his name is Brian Funk, of deputy GM of one of the big transit agencies in Minnesota, who actually did ask, hey, Christine, I'm really curious as to why there aren't more. So I hope whoever's listening to this takes interest and does develop, because I do hear, you know, I remember talking to one of the venture capitalists, and he was like, yeah, my son, you know, I bought a Tesla for him. It's sitting in the driveway and he just wants to take the bus. And I'm like, kudos to his son, because I do think in the US, it's a unique sort of like density and ridership issue because we're so spread out. And as you know, the history of how these cities kind of like came to be, it doesn't have the sort of efficiency there. But when I speak to city states like Singapore, or if you travel to a lot of these European cities, public transit system is really well maintained. And I think what that does is really gives people a sense of independence, reduces congestion and traffic. So I can see how a lot of the cities can be better designed. And if I reflect on our past engagement with some of the cities in Texas, Texas has a growing population into these new cities. You know, some of the famous cities like Austin, Dallas, there are other neighborhoods nearby that's, that a lot of the millennials are moving out to for more space. And I think that's where when we spoke with some of these public transit agencies, they were saying, hey, we could invest in infrastructure, but automating some of these, buses can help to really help us reroute without having to, have a fixed infrastructure and routes after the fact that people have moved there. So it makes them agile and be more timely in addressing the needs of people. And I do think this has huge implications for how cities are built, how people commute to work, or how people get to schools, because it gives them the opportunity also for that social economic mobility as well. Physical mobility definitely has an impact on that. So I am very eager to see more of automation and the technology applied to not only passenger vehicles for it to be safer and built more effectively, but also other transit modes as well.
It's interesting. There's also a huge safety benefit too in promoting public transportation. I was reading a report just a little while ago showing the statistics of fatality per vehicle mile traveled for different modes, whether you're in a car or a bus or a train. And buses are by far safer per mile as a transportation option.
Great. And as you know, similar to trucking industry, the bus industry really suffers from shortage of drivers. So I do think, and especially during the pandemic, to protect some of these drivers. And as you know, with automation means allowing people to do jobs that really allows them to maybe not be away from their family. I think that was one of the challenges of the trucking industry. And then for them to do other jobs that could be managerial and other ways that humans are better equipped to do. So I do think that it presents opportunities and opportunities to improve, lives of the operators, but also the passengers and many others in the ecosystem as well. So that's why I also see that a lot of the real estate developers are really interested. And I won't name them, but I did engage with some of the real estate developers in the Bay Area, where they're thinking, hey, this land that didn't have any access to major transit routes, if there could be a way to offer some autonomous solution in a safe way, we would love that, because now that really has an impact on congestion and time wasted in commuting. Many of us like driving. It's just that we just don't enjoy commuting and being stuck in traffic.
Yeah, thank you for that. There's a lot of information, so it's going to be hard to, I hope our listeners can digest all of that, but there's a lot going on in this area and a lot of thought leaders putting this together. Thanks for everything today. That was great. But before we let you go, do you have any advice for newcomers coming to the industry?
Yeah, I think one of the things that I see consistently is ability for anybody from any background to continue to be curious. So if you've been at your job for 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years onwards, I think it's that curiosity, right? And think about, wait, could this be improved? Not just kind of buy into like, oh yeah, this is how it's always been. And that's how innovation come about. And that means travel more, see a lot more things, talk to different people. Like if you work at a big company, there's so many different functions. Talk to people in different groups and ask them questions. Hey, what are you seeing? What are you doing? And take risks like switching jobs or switching divisions. And that means like, I apply that to my own like day to day. I love making friends from all areas, all different walks of life, because you learn from them. And you get ideas from them, you get inspirations from them. So I would say, just do that. And you just never know where the conversation will take you. On that point, I hope I get to work with Dan, as he, transitions to his new role, because in my career in Silicon Valley, like I've come across people in so many different contexts, because everyone's, moves on to new roles. I could be helpful to you now, and later you can be helpful to me. And, that friendship kind of flourishes. And, that's a really good feeling when you can be friends for, in many different contexts.
Great. Wonderful. Thanks, Christine. Yeah, I hope we'll have a chance to work together.
Yeah.
So great. This is a wonderful podcast. There was a lot of information here. Thank you very much. Before we go, I've got one more question for you. And I wanted to continue our conversation before we started the podcast here. And I was kind of laughing to myself because it seems like fast food comes up a lot in this podcast. But to continue our conversation, what would you say, Burger King or Taco Bell?
Ah, such an important question. I was hoping you'd ask me this question because I was laughing when I heard you guys talk about Taco Bell and Burger King. I gotta say Taco Bell, just because I love that crunch. And I don't think there's anyone else there. And I love that I miss it when I travel. Sometimes I'm like, you know, I really have to find Taco Bell around here. I think this actually happened when I was in Japan and I was craving for it. And I think, you know, while there are many, you know, tacos being sold, I think what Taco Bell did well is the scalability, reliability, and making it convenient. And, you know, having that feeling of, that feeling of like Taco Bell and I miss it, that emotion is also important. Whereas I feel like Burger King's great. I do like them quite a bit, but there are many similar products. So I would say Taco Bell. But if you were to ask me Coke or Pepsi, you know, I would say Coke, which goes with the Burger King. So that's my answer to you.
You've got to go to both then.
Yeah, I do.
Thank you, Chrissy. I think that solves a dilemma for a lot of our listeners who many of them live in Paris, which always had a Burger King, but recently got their own Taco Bell as well.
Paris, Illinois.
I'm sorry, yes. I meant Paris, Illinois, not Paris, France. Although Paris, France, I'm sure also has Taco Bell. But yeah, if you're listening to the podcast and driving and you can't decide between Burger King and Taco Bell, there you have it.
Great. Thank you very much. That was very informative. It definitely won't be our last podcast, but it's the last one without Dan. So glad you get to be part of it, Christine.
Maybe I'll be back.
I am. Yeah, I know. I'm so happy to be part of it. It was so fun talking to you guys. You guys have great voices. And I think you do need to get a turtle since Dan's going to leave a big void.
Right.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.
Okay. Bye.